And good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Other Side of Midnight, that time between dusk and dawn where reality, as we define it with a capital R in most of our lives, is well, not exactly what it's cracked up to be when you look at it through the lens of a different reality at this time of night. And this morning is no exception. We have a number of things that we're going to be doing. And the first item of business, of course, is I want to pick up on our show on Friday night, Saturday morning. As you know, Joseph Buckman, our friend and colleague here at Other Side of Midnight, did a show on Thursday morning. I'm sorry, Friday, because the midnight stuff, you know, and described at some length his dad's medical issues and the fact that he was dying of gangrene and that he had served as the chief of staff of an extraordinary hospital there in southern Indiana. Well, unfortunately, I have the sad news to report that on Sunday morning, Joe's dad died. Dr. Marshall Buckman, 91, MD, from New Albany, died on Sunday morning. Now, the service will be held on Sunday, May 15th, at 12:30 p.m. at the Trinity United Methodist Church in Charleston Road in New Albany. Dr. Buckman was a native of Fort Wayne. Well, I didn't know that because I grew up for some time in my early years in Fort Wayne. He was retired from his private medical practice after serving many years. He was a graduate of the University of Louisville School of Medicine. He received a Master's of Education degree from Purdue University. And before graduating from medical school, he taught in the New Albany Floyd County school system. He was a member of the Floyd County Medical Society. The Indiana Medical Society was a former chief of staff, as I said, of the medical staff at Floyd Memorial Hospital, and a member of the old Silvercrest Children's Development Hospital. He served on the board of the Floyd County Health Department for more than 34 years and was an Army veteran of World War II and a member of the Trinity United Methodist Church. Now, you know, God rest his soul, I want everyone to think about this. There'll be a number of folks who will say, given that we were, you know, looking into this from a consciousness perspective, distance healing, whatever term you want to give this technology, that because Marshall Buckman died, that this failed. And I want to stop everybody, and I want you to understand that when you engage in this kind of activity, you are intruding, in essence, into another sovereign life, another conscious entity. And that entity has to want to go in the direction that all the people supporting Dr. Buckman were expressing on Friday morning and Saturday. And the fact that we apparently failed doesn't mean we did fail. This is most important because when you're dealing with conscious entities, their rights and concerns and, you know, objectives and goals, wishes and dreams, all of that comes into play. Dr. Buckman really wanted to join his departed wife, who died a few years ago, and his work at 91, obviously, he considered, was done. And I thank you all for participating in what is still an unending story. And hopefully we will have more progress and more to report in future. I want to shift gears now to othersideofmidnight.com and to discuss some of what we're going to talk about this morning with my guest from the background of this obviously changing physics that we've talked about so many times on the show. So if you go to othersideofmidnight.com, our homepage, go to the upper right-hand corner, click on Radio with Pictures. That will take you to tonight's guest page. Just scroll down under Radio with Pictures. And item number one is a story on how a NASA team now believe they have verified that the climate change, the global warming and melting the ice at both the poles, is in fact changing the physics, the Newtonian dynamics of how the Earth itself is actually rotating. And they go into great lengths, and there's a lot of modeling, and there's a lot of discussion about this confirms global warming and all that, and nowhere in this discussion, which is why this is relevant to our conversation this evening, do they mention the really distinct possibility that the data they're looking at, which goes back to 1998, the 98-99 time frame, that's when this sudden change in what's called the Chandler wobble, which is a slightly over a year long, like 13-month, 13-and-a-half-month, 14-month wobble of the Earth through 37, 40 feet, something like that. Very tiny on the scale of the planet, very big in terms of what's driving this. It's really totally mysterious. You know, from the time it was discovered by, you guessed it, a guy named Chandler, way back when, none of the normal dynamics and equations and celestial mechanics and all the tools that astronomers have to bring to bear on this stuff these days couldn't really explain it. As soon as I became aware of the HD torsion field model, I realized that one of the obvious things to test would be if there was a non-gravitational, higher-level torsion field connection in a spinning solar system, which is the model that everything spinning interacts with everything else through this torsion field, through energetics and involvement through the field. It looks like if you take a line from the sun and you look down on the solar system and you look down on the Earth's orbit, which is mostly circular, and you look down on Jupiter's orbit way out there, half a billion miles from the sun, which is circular, and you forget that they're tilted slightly to each other in terms of being on the same plane, same surface of the big dinner plate we're kind of analogizing here. Anyway, if you look down on this little model and you start the Earth going around the sun, it takes 1 year, by definition, to go around, and so it takes a year to come back to that line that stretches out into space. If you start with Earth and Jupiter lined up, it takes an additional 400 and some odd days to catch up to where Jupiter will have moved in the year that it took the Earth to go around the sun. So this is really kind of like Churchill Downs. It's like the super horse race in the sky, if you look at it, perpendicular. And the reason for the Chandler wobble is that alignment. Remember, in the HD physics model, alignments are as important as spin. It's not only rotation, 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 but it's also alignment, alignment, alignment. So as we have measured in our work with the torsion field detector, the Accutron, with an alignment of the sun and Venus and the Earth, the so-called Venus transit just a few years ago, we know that alignments produce stunning effects in the physics. So this recurring alignment of the Earth, sun, and Jupiter is what I believe in our model is driving the Chandler wobble. Well, what these guys are claiming in this study, this NASA study, is that in 1998, that wobble experienced a sudden left-hand turn by about 75 degrees. You know, it's going along, it's wobbling very nicely, very periodically, wobbling, 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 and then boing. Well, what they don't know, because it hasn't been published yet in a formal way, and that's a whole other discussion about getting into the peer-reviewed journals. What they don't know is that in 1998, there were a group of independent researchers who were looking at the Chandler wobble in terms of the Naval Observatory measurements, looking at the Earth in relation to the stars, very precise measurements. And in that same year, there was a stunning change in the Chandler wobble that occurred from its normal attitude, from its normal progression as a circular wobble. Those two events appear to be occasioned by, this is going to really be interesting, when, again, in the alignment model, on the winter solstice in the northern hemisphere, December 21, that was the first time in modern history for 26,000 years, give or take the canonical few hundred, that the sun aligned with the Earth at the winter solstice, the so-called Mayan calendar dates. And we progress up until 2016 when that alignment will come to an end. That's why in our physics model, 2016 is the year when all the you-know-what is going to hit the rotating kitchen appliance, as it appears to do. So we scan down now to item number 2 on our hit parade this morning. Did you happen to watch the Masters over the weekend a couple days ago? Three golfers hit sequential holes in one on the same hole, the 16th hole in Augusta at the Masters, And it broke a 16-year streak on that hole by adding number 16 to the 16th hole, hole-in-ones. I mean, you can't get more totally, totally, totally bizarre and unscientific and Twilight Zone da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da than that. And the mainstream media has just kind of like hiccuped and gone on. They haven't a clue. They are clueless as to how impossible that event on the weekend was. Can't happen. You know, you heard Dean Radin earlier last week talking about the odds that the experiments, the so-called eggs, the Princeton eggs, which he's using to detect globally consciousness events like, you know, Diana dying and the World Trade Tower events and all that, that they're now up to the 7 sigma level, which is like over a trillion to one against chance. Well, I'd like to see some odds on three golfers hitting back-to-back holes in one. And, oh, did I happen to mention that the third one involved the ball hitting the ball of another player? It was a ricochet shot? I mean, impossible. Impossible unless, A, someone was using an extraordinary torsion field technology, pocket-sized, in a trench coat, in the crowd. We should look at the crowd videos and see who was standing there making all this happen to send messages, you know, because golf and Scotland and Masons, and I mean, it's a whole shaggy dog, you know, rabbit hole to go down, which we will not tonight. The other possibility is, and that takes me to my guest, it was a glitch, a total, wonderful, exquisite glitch in the matrix, in the program. Part of a series of such glitches, which we label synchronicities, most of people label them coincidences, and they hurry on. Well, the mainstream media picked themselves up after this stunning cannot-happen set of events, and they hurried on, focusing again on item number 3, which has never before happened in modern political history or in any political history, where a mainstream newspaper suddenly comes off like the National Lampoon or the Harvard Crimson, and does a total fake, you know, front page of a year after Donald Trump's election as President of the United States. Again, we are in free fall in the Twilight Zone, which leads me to item number 4, which is, as all this is going on, oh yes, Bernard Sanders, president, socialist president, nominee in future, maybe, is suddenly invited to the Vatican to give a speech. And remember what Pope Francis, the first Jesuit pope, Pope Francis said a few months ago about Donald Trump, how he took aim, and they say in politics, never punch down. I mean, there is such a matrix here. There is such an exquisite matrix. The question is no longer, is there a matrix? The question is, what the heck is driving it? And how deep into the rabbit hole do we have to go to get answers? Well, tonight, fortunately, after posing all those incipiently incredibly important questions, we happen to have someone with us who might actually be able to provide us some answers. Bruce Lipton is a scientist and a lecturer. He received his PhD at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville back in 1971. Almost, good heavens, the dark ages compared to now. He served as an associate professor of anatomy at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine. His research on mechanisms controlling cell behavior employed clone human stem cells, and in addition, he's lectured in cell biology, histology, and embryology for the past several decades. Bruce resigned his tenured position to pursue independent research integrating quantum physics with cell biology. His breakthrough studies on the cell membrane, the skin of the cell, reveal that the behavior and health of cells are controlled by the environment. Findings that were in direct contrast to prevailing dogma that life is indeed controlled by our genes. And with that, Bruce, welcome to the other side of midnight.
Wow, thank you so much, Richard. I so appreciate being here with you. Honored to be your guest. And I also really want to say how much I appreciate the audience, because the audience out there are what I would call the cultural creatives. The people who are starting to look for the answers outside the box, because the answers inside the box are creating the problem. And this is a great opportunity to talk about some new wonderful science that is changing the box completely.
I think I want to start tonight, given you had this extraordinary career that went from, what the hell am I doing in this place, to, oh, that's what I should have remembered I was here to do. Can you kind of describe that personal journey? Because every one of us have that moment. I described mine months ago on the show. And to me, it's kind of the quintessence of that spark that separates us from any other conscious beings on the planet. We have this curiosity, and we spend the rest of our lives getting over people who basically try to make us not have that curiosity.
Absolutely. You know, I got into science because basically as a kid, you can hear from two different camps. You can hear from spiritual people or from scientific people. And spiritual people always had these wonderful words of wisdom. But even as a kid, you could see, you know, while all the words were out there, their lives really never matched anything they were talking about. And so that just drove me into science. And so I got away from spirituality. In science, you know, I was cultivated by the belief system of the time that, yeah, we're just a consequence of genetic accidents. And here we are. And we're just a machine programmed by these genes. And ended up teaching what is called genetic determinism to medical students, which is the belief that genes control our lives. And my research was on stem cells, and this was 1967, man. This is like 47, 48 years ago. I was cloning stem cells 47 years ago.
Well, this is kind of at the heyday when DNA had been cracked and the code and all of this, and it looked like, oh, we found, you know, to misquote Tesla, you know, the wheel work of nature. We found out how it clicks, how it functions, how it ticks, tick, 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 right?
Yeah, and so like yourself, all of a sudden I'm standing up saying, well, hey, wait a minute, that's not really right. And of course, like lemmings, all the other scientists are running off this DNA prize off the edge of a cliff somewhere. And I was the only guy out there going, no, that's not it. And so I became, you know, I left the system. I was teaching medical school and I left the system because I realized my research revealed it was unambiguous. The results clearly revealed that the environment controls genes.
Okay, let's stop there. For us who really, really, really trying to avoid biology, I mean, why do you think I became a scientist and a physicist and an astronomer type? I hated biology, you know. And a lot of other people in our audience, they kind of fell into it, but they weren't really there because they wanted to be. So they hurried on as quickly as possible, picked themselves up, and went into, I don't know, law. For those people that, I mean, this is the fulcrum of your epiphany and the breakthrough of the science itself. What was that defining? What were you doing?
Oh, yeah.
And then what made you say, wait a minute, this is hugely more important than what's going on in this Petri dish?
It was a transformational minute where my life was transformed like two lives. Boom. And the idea was what? So I'm out there saying the environment controls the biology. Everybody else is...
That's not your... Yeah. You went through schools, you got a degree, you were interested in biology, you got fascinated by what it looked like through microscopes.
Yeah.
You're working for somebody, and you're doing something, and then this thing, this epiphany this afternoon happens.
Yes.
What
yes.
led up right before then? Where were you? What was the time frame?
At that moment, I was trying to say, how does the environment control genes? And I was studying the cell membrane.
And where were you? Where were you?
Grenada, Barbados. I was in the Caribbean, away from the world, you know, like a nice think tank.
Well, you weren't posted there. That was kind of what, a sabbatical or something?
No, I was teaching at a medical school, so I was enjoying the time. Yeah.
Okay.
So the bottom line is the physicist. I'm not a physicist. I'm a biologist. So at that moment, I defined the membrane, which I've been studying for 10 years in a completely different way, and this was the definition: the cell membrane is a liquid crystal semiconductor with gates and channels. That's what I defined. And then all of a sudden I said, I've heard that phrase somewhere before. And then I looked at my Simpleton Radio Shack book on understanding your microprocessor. And I said, holy Jesus. You know, it's like, what a coincidence. The membrane and a chip have the same definition. That was the immediate thought. And then I said, wait a minute. I checked the channels. The whole thing, it was like, oh my God, it's a carbon-based chip.
Oh my. and or a three-dimensional paint by numbers.
It's exactly how our life is created. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. That bottom line result of all of this stuff?
Well, see, now that gets us into 3D printing of everything up and including life.
Everything is touched by this, because basically what happened in that one moment, the most important thing for me, not being spiritual, was I realized there's a PIN number on each of our cells that is different for each person that receives a broadcast from the environment that is identity.
Okay.
Now, I'm not in here.
let us define environment, because as the folks who follow this show know, yep, all the work that I've been doing, again, in physics, having nothing to do with biology, except actually when you expose this stuff to plants, they really, 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 really like it. They respond. Are we talking communication, external cell communications, in a Newtonian sense? Electrical fields, magnetophoresis, all that stuff. Or are we talking a larger etheric field in which life is immersed, and it's the communication through the field that modulates all of what we're going to talk about?
100%.
Oh, okay. Exactly. Good. I'm glad we're on the same page. Just had to define.
Oh, yeah.
Definitions are crucial in science.
So the cell is interesting because the DNA doesn't run anything. The DNA is like program.
Isn't the DNA a template? Isn't it your blueprint, your instructions for building the antenna? And then it's what comes in through the antenna that then defines what the program evolves into.
Yeah, because it's a blueprint. And that's the first thing you have to just acknowledge. It's a blueprint. And I say, why is it relevant? Because the concept of a blueprint turning on and off makes no sense in the world. I say, exactly. The whole belief that we have been programmed, that genes are self-actualizing, that genes are turning themselves on and our lives are like we're victims of our heredity.
Okay, let me ask this question
false
then.
False understanding, yeah.
Which is kind of gets us into the political, because you can't do science these days without getting political. Well, when I went through the Martian doorway, Bruce, when I discovered that nobody wanted to know anything, not because they weren't curious, but because, as both Bernie and Trump are saying, the system's totally corrupt.
Yes.
And for anybody who thinks the scientific community is not as corrupt as all the other institutions we used to believe in, guys, then you have not been listening to this program for the last several months.
Ostriches with heads in the sand.
Deliberate heads in sand. I had a really sad experience this afternoon with someone who's very famous, whose ideas are brilliant, whose mind is beyond reproach, who I'm not describing Hillary, by the way, and who I want on this show to talk about the future, and this individual is so resistant to the idea there's anything on Mars, on the moon, anybody built anything. It's all pareidolia. It's all we're all just seeing stuff we want to see. And his/her political position determines the science. Bruce, here's the question. Is our political system basically the reason in the scientific world where this and other stunning, seminal, breakthrough, paradigm-shattering discoveries just aren't getting the time of day, like Dean Radin's work, because they don't think we're ready?
No, I'm sorry that. No. They know damn well what it means to the way life is and the way they've controlled it. Because the change of this is the upheaval. We're in an evolutionary upheaval at this very minute, and the whole idea is that the future cannot be run the way it is being run at the current time, because this is actually what science has recognized as truth, that the human behavior is precipitating the sixth mass extinction of life on this planet. We are undermining the entire web of life and living out of harmony. And so the idea is civilization, if it doesn't change, it's the end anyway. It's already deep into extinction. It's not just, I mean, 90% of the fish in the ocean since 1950 are gone. 54 or 52% of the animals on this planet since 1970 are gone. And it's like, so what's the point? The leadership, which is, and if you understand the new biology, where we go with it is that the concept of the matrix, it's not a science fiction. The matrix is a documentary. We have been programmed, and the program is going to break. And the wonderful parts about it, the millennial generation, the listeners on this line right now, the computer generation people, because they have a global awareness as compared to computer people, which only have local awareness. There's an evolution. There's a shift right now. An old civilization, the one we're in, is coming down. And the simple reason is this. Crisis precipitates evolution. Simple reason. You hit the wall. You can't keep doing it now. There's something else that has to happen. And we've hit the wall everywhere on every level of this planet. And it's all saying it's coming to an end. We are in an upheaval. And then that brings your politics and your religion and all that stuff to the forefront, because it's a complete shakeup of cultural and life and civilization. And the younger people are actually going to be shaping this coming process, the millennial generation.
Well, look at their response to Bernie. You know, there seems to be some innate, almost like geese flying south, you know, deep wisdom that unless they embrace the future, the one candidate really talking about the future in ways that are paradigm shattering.
Yes.
From a mainstream point of view, who's actually talking about where we're going. We're going somewhere. We either get an idea and get it under control, or it's going to happen regardless, but we're going where we're going. And all the other candidates, you know, with a lesser extent, and maybe Trump, who wants to go backward, the idea that we can take control of things that heretofore have been thought to be uncontrollable seems to now be part of the mainstream body politic. And did you ever think you'd survive long enough to see that happen?
I can't. The absurdity to me when I see it is like, oh my God, it's like a television show. It's just like the kind of candidates that we've had who shy away from intellect and understanding or science and, you know, or anti-science. It's like, wow. It freaks me out, and it's interesting, but I also know this. The good news is in the bad news. That's the interesting part. The bad news says, not sustainable, folks. It's not going to last. It's going to collapse. You talked about 2016 in the intro. Yeah, it's coming. It's big time.
And well, see, I'm trying to figure out why. I'm a kind of a why person. I'm going to look at the underlying dynamics. And, you know, I want to don't fight about the data. I want to fight about what the data means. But we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a short break here. Everybody can go get a cup of coffee, do something else, you know, watch an ancient TV commercial, look at a brief 2 minutes of Superman, whatever. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning is Dr. Bruce Lipton. And we're discussing everything. You know, the kind of integrated theory of everything. Grand unified theory of consciousness and everything. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. We shall return. And we are back on the other side of midnight, just after the bottom of the hour. My guest this morning, Dr. Bruce Lipton. Bruce, this whole Matrix thing, it came up the other night. And the only problem I had initially with the Matrix, because it was obvious that what they were trying to say, and it's profoundly true, and you know whether you look at it as just metaphor or actually a one-to-one connection, the thing that bothered me, and I'm kind of rethinking that part of my reaction, was in the end, the MacGuffin was, we're all light bulbs. We're all basically little batteries powering some mega power structure for purposes unknown. And we're just like cells, you know, cogs in the wheel, whatever metaphor. And mindlessly, our essence has nothing to do. Our hopes, our dreams, our consciousness, our desires have nothing to do with our actual function in this reality. And it was such an abasement of the idea of being human, that the discovery that, in fact, we are connected and there are associations that transcend the physics that we think we know, doesn't that raise the issue that connectedness in itself becomes the Achilles heel, where someone with malevolent intentions could actually wheel us all into this giant matrix machine without our even knowing?
We're being driven by the machine right now. The fact is, being programmed. This is interesting.
So you're saying this is not a metaphor. This is it. This is real.
No, this is the program. Getting out of the program is the destination.
And where does the program come from?
The program starts in the first 7 years of your life.
But who's behind it? Who architects it? Or is it just the way things fall?
All I can tell you is, I can tell you this, the knowledge of the program and its consequence is 400 years old, and it's been boasted by the Jesuits for 400 years when they say, give me a child until it's seven and I will show you the man. What they were saying is the exact truth. 7 years is the program period, and after that, consciousness kicks in. The first 7 years, the child's brain is not operating EEG-wise predominantly in consciousness. It's operating a little lower in theta, and theta is imagination, but theta is hypnosis. And this is how, think of the thousands of rules to be a member of a family and a community and a society. And I said, well, how can you teach an infant that? And the answer is, they're on record and they observe. So their behavior and way of living life is acquired by observing others.
Bruce, the term impressionable youth is real. I mean, come on. Why do you think we have parents? Why do you think there's a social structure for teaching little savages how to be human beings? But the problem is, you encountered it, I encountered it, any creative. By the way, where did that term culture of creative first come from? Who first coined that?
I don't know if that was Toynbee or no, he was cultural minorities, or creative minorities. I'm not sure which one cultural creatives is from.
Because my friend Jay Widener used to use that years ago, and it just what I'm trying to celebrate on the show is people who are cultural creatives, meaning if you let yourself. Every one of us can be culturally creative, but most of us succumb to the programming, which is you're not good enough, you know, you'll never make it, you're a loser.
7 years. First 7 years of life is criticism by the concept of if you criticize your child, then they will do better. Good idea, except if consciousness is not working, which it isn't for the first 7 years, it's on record. The child is just recording the words. That's the program. Not good enough, not worthy, not lovable, because it's not thinking of what the parent is thinking. It's just recording. And then you start 7 years with all that, and then you find out, as we found out in some of our workshops, is that 80 to 90% of the people on this planet will not test positive for I love myself. And why is that relevant? And the answer is simple. If you can't love yourself, then by logic and definition, how can anybody else love you? Because that would mean they had no quality control. and so basically it's created an isolation of people because of self-worthiness. And this is unconscious. And this is the big issue. The idea is, There's a conscious mind, which is prefrontal cortex, which is where our identity is, where our unique character comes from, our the seat of our soul. And the 90% of the brain behind it is the subconscious. It's the habit mind. It learns how to do things. And then, I mean, it's great. I mean, it's learning how to walk, learning how to drive the car, learning how to ride a bicycle, learning ABCs, all these learning things. So I said, it's really good. Of course, if you mislearn, then there's a problem. And then I say, well, here's the problem. And this is the world problem is that the conscious mind is who is creative. And it has wishes and desires and aspirations. That's what all of us, what do you want, man? It's like a conscious mind comes up with the answer. And I say, when the conscious mind's driving the vehicle, it's being driven by wishes and desires, and it goes in that direction. Then I say, and here's the problem. But the conscious mind can think. And the moment the conscious mind thinks, all behavior is by default shifted to the subconscious mind. So if you're walking down the street and you have a thought, doesn't mean you stop walking until the thought's over. The moment you have a thought, all the rest is now guidance by subconscious mind, which can do the whole thing anyway. And so the whole idea about it is this. It now is recognized. This is the crux. 95% of the day, our mind is in thought. And I go, but what does that mean? It says, well, 95% of the day, your behavior by default is from the subconscious programs. And I go, and yes, and where did they come from? And I go, by observing other people. And the relevance is, well, wait a minute, then that means my subconscious programs are not playing my wishes and desires. I go, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, they probably sabotage most of them.
That raises the question, if that first 7 years, that first critical seven tetrahedral spin years,
yes,
not accidental that it's seven, and by the way, this Pope knows exactly what this physics can do, and he's the first Jesuit, and Bernie's going to see him. You know, I've had people actually call me up and say, I'm concerned that Bernie's going to come back a clone change individual. No, I'm serious. We're in the twilight zone where anything as outrageous as you can think of it can be uttered, because no one now wants to be, again, that cliche, politically correct. But in this free-fall scenario, people are uttering in the mainstream scenarios and ideas that were absolutely unconscionable just a couple of years ago.
Because the ideas that got us here are the ones that we're struggling to survive with. So it's like, now it's like, give me another idea, because the ones that we're using aren't working right now. And we're looking, and this is part of the evolution. This is what cultural creatives do. Let me look. Let me see a story that makes more sense than the one I've been living in.
Oh, by the way, you know, our crack research department, you know, the guys in the back room, headed by M, have found the culture of creatives, how 50 million people are changing the world, is a nonfiction social sciences and sociology book by sociologist Paul Ray and psychologist Sherry Anderson, and it was first published back in 2000. And they they created the term cultural creatives, and they actually have a profile of how many in Western society, Eastern society, around the world. And, of course, those are the folks that drive the train. I've always said, people say, well, how much does it take, how many folks does it take to change, you know, the light bulb in Marin? You know that old joke, light bulb has to want to change?
Yeah.
Well, I've estimated, looking historically back and hopefully forward, that really you only need to get about 2% to have wonderful, stunning change. Because the rest just kind of come along for whatever ride they're on. So it's that 2% you need to focus on, which makes it so much more doable, even metonymically, let alone if you change consciousness.
100% accurate, in the sense that people have to understand this. We have a lot of thoughts going on in our head, a lot of electrical activity, and I say, yeah, I can put wires on your brain, on your skin, on your head, and I could read the electrical activity in your brain. You go, wow, like, so there's a lot of stuff going on inside. And I go, there's a new reading technology, and it's called not electroencephalograph, it's called magnetoencephalograph. Relevance. The probe that reads the brain does not touch the head even. It's outside.
Are these little superconducting squids?
Yeah, that's the technology behind it. And so basically what is it saying? It says, well, the idea that your thoughts in your head, it's like, no, they're not. They're broadcast out in the field.
Mm.
So if you get a quantity of individuals, each head is a tuning fork. And when you get enough tuning forks on the same frequency, the field is empowered at that point
So we're very clear, we're not talking radio waves, microwaves, EM, the standard, you know, Maxwell equations, electromagnetic radio systems. We're talking communication in a field which is below that, which is the substrate, the foundation that generates under certain conditions those EM fields, but it's deeper. It's the, like, pervasive etheric reality in which atoms and energy packets and photons and all that are immersed. So that's the medium. That's the ocean.
Yes.
In which this information is being transferred. Now, do you have any ideas for how fast, what the limit is?
Well,
is it limited?
Not as far as I can say right now, because the idea is this. We're receiving a broadcast. That's what makes you different from me, and that's why we can't exchange parts with each other, organs. Why? Because there's identity. I said, yeah, but where's the identity coming from? I said, well, there are antennas on the surface. Some of them, not all of them, some of them are understood by medicine, and they're called, interestingly enough, they're called self-receptors. and the interesting part about what do they use it for? Well, you can it's like a giant combination lock where each antenna is like a number in the combination lock. And the significance is, if you can do matching, like in, let's say somebody needs a heart or a kidney, you can't just take anybody's heart or kidney. What you look for is you find out the self-receptors on the recipient, and then you look for an organ that has an overlap of those things, because the closer they are, the less the immune system will be aggressive against the graft.
Right.
So the idea is this. There's an identity to your cells. And it's interesting. So think about this story, which you've heard, but then bring it into context right here, is that us saying, okay, we have antennas on the surface of our cell. They receive an identity. And all of our cells and our individual bodies are all tuned with the same antenna, so they're all coordinated. 50 trillion cells are on the same broadcast band at the same moment. So the whole community is on the same station. And then I say, so your cells are receiving an identity. And what's interesting is, so I say, where's the identity coming from? And then here's an experiment Baxter Cleave was involved with it, taking cells, putting in a petri dish from an 30 miles away in a laboratory.
Yeah, can you back up and just say that last line, because Skype dropped out? Of course, right at the point.
Okay. The part was that
what Cleave Baxter was doing in terms of single cells and their communication.
Yeah. He took cells from an individual, put them in a petri dish, moved them 40 miles away, and then had electrical readout of the, like in front of a camera, and had the readout of the cells 40 miles away on a split screen. And when they elicited an emotional response in the person, the cells 40 miles away instantaneously became activated electrically.
Mm.
What's the point? Our identity is a broadcast, and wherever your cells are with your identity receptors, you are receiving this broadcast, okay? And the idea was that the first thing that, like, okay, so my mind is blown, and the first understanding of A, it's the membrane's a chip, and there's a pin number on it, which is an identity set of receptors to get into it, and all of a sudden it said, yeah, but oh my God, then that means I'm not in the cell.
Okay, this is really important for me because we kind of skipped over it a little fast, so let me go back.
Okay.
Your experiments with stem cells prove to you in the laboratory that there is extracellular communication, that cells can communicate, and I don't know how far you tested it, whether it was as radical as the Baxter experiment 40 miles away, but there was some mechanism of communicating between cells. When did you come to the conclusion that it wasn't electrochemical, but it was a field? It was somehow through the ether that, of course, was thrown out back during the Einstein relativity era.
Okay, so now then we get to the basic secret of life, and it's this. We are made out of proteins. We're a protein mechanism. There are over about 100,000 different proteins. They're like pieces you assemble together.
Yeah, and proteins are made of hydrogen and nitrogen and phosphorus.
And they're each different. 100,000 different versions, okay? And they assemble like an assembly kit. And I say, so why is it relevant? And I say, well, that's what gives us our physical structure. So you got, and I say, well, a cadaver
and
is
lots
a
of
protein
carbon.
Structure.
Lots of carbon.
Yeah. And now here's what's interesting. Where does life come from? And the answer is this. Environmental signals that complement the protein vibrational frequency, the signals that complement the protein cause the protein to change shape. When the protein changes shape, that's movement. And that's where life comes from. So we're a protein mechanism, and the proteins move by changing shape up in response to environmental signals. Okay.
So when you say environmental signals, you're talking etheric signals.
I'm talking a field. I have no idea exactly what the signals are, but if you take the antennas off the surface of the cell, there's no response to the cell anymore.
See, when you say environmental, I'm thinking ducks in a swamp and, you know, getting the right percentage of pH
And I'm also talking, and the sun is environmental,
exactly.
And the solar system is pretty damaged.
But we're talking real fundamental field stuff as opposed to the stuff that we can see and don't understand.
Absolutely,
yet.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, the information of how the environment signal controls the biology is the movement of a protein, which is the protein. And now we get to the bottom line. I said, well, our conventional belief is that signals that affect our proteins, our biology, are like drugs. Chemicals, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Chemicals, physical things. It turns out when they started to look at the mechanics of what this is called a conformational change, where it goes from shape A to shape B, the movement. And in a conformational change, if you understand the mechanics, you can predict the actual movement, how it occurred. So they were studying the mechanics of how the molecule changes shape, and they were using Newtonian mechanics.
Right.
And guess what? Totally unable to predict the movements. Didn't even come near it, okay? Then they applied the principles of quantum mechanics, and they were able to accurately predict the conformational change movements. What was the point? The point was this. It's not a chemical, physical thing that is doing this. It's an energy field. It's a quantum entanglement. There's energy fields entangling with each other, and there's resonance and good vibes and bad vibes, which are resonances that we read as energy readers and which we ignore to our own peril, because the vibes are nature's primary communication, and it's reading the field. Why? Your life is dependent upon reading the field. The life of every organism is dependent upon reading the field.
But it really depends on what we would term pattern matching. Let me go back and mix in politics again. Bill Clinton ran on a basic phrase back during his first campaign. It's the economy, stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
The foundation of this physics, from what I've understood, this field physics, the torsion field, et cetera, whatever you want to call it, it's the same thing, seems to be geometry. It's the geometry, stupid. So the communication is through the geometry of template matching and the molecules that can have the most interesting variety of geometries and communicate that through the field. It's pattern matching back to your Intel chip metaphor.
That's so beautiful. Thank you for saying all that, because this is exactly how it all works. And Genesis, as a physics point of view, is imagine the Earth inorganic. And the Earth is spinning on the axis, and the sun is a beam. So imagine it's like a laser beam.
Right.
And where it hits the surface of the Earth, the photons entangle with the mineral, forming organic chemistry, which is mobile chemistry, okay, is mobile. And the life is from, as the Native Americans would say, father, son, the laser beam, mother, earth, the mineral, coming together, creating organic chemistry, okay? Now the part that I started to laugh at when you brought this up about geometry is this. It's an etching. If you think about it, the laser sun is etching the surface of the Earth, generating organic material.
Right.
And I go, and then I say, and there was a recent study on the physics of etching. And the question was, what happens at the interface where a beam etches the surface? Like, and so it's like making chips, and that's what the physics is all about, etching a surface and then trying to understand the mechanics of it. Okay, now the laughing part. What they found was this, is that at the interface where the beam hits the etching, and the etching is carried out, is the spontaneous creation of a fractal geometry.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. Put it all back in your head now and think about what you said, and you realize creation was the energy field. Evolution was the time it took the mobile organic parts at the interface to assemble to complement the existing field.
And what if the field changes? Because in our work, we're tracking a modulation of the field at several different frequencies simultaneously.
Yeah.
Think of it like an orchestra.
Yeah.
And in our model, when things all kind of come together, when you have a nodal point where all the different frequencies, in fact, in your book, in the Biology of Belief, as I was going through it this afternoon, there is a page which has a whole bunch of frequency diagrams. So obviously frequency is an innate part of your analysis that we're all connected.
Absolutely. That's what I was trying to say. The primal language of biology is reading a vibration. And you say, well, why should I read a vibration? What's the relevance? The answer is this. Vibration is energy. I go, yeah, but what's the relevance? Energy is life. You have energy, you got life. You don't have energy, you die. What's the point of reading the energy? It's like, well, then you're in the field. you want to go toward any direction of the field that gives you a higher vibration, a good vibe. Mm. That's what we experience it as. Mm-hmm. And you want to avoid any part of the field where you get a bad vibe, a loss of energy, because it's telling you.
But it's even more fundamental, Bruce. It's Shannon's information theory. The old guy at MIT, I don't want to call him an old guy. Remember, higher frequencies carry more information. Lower frequencies carry less information. So when people are switching between these high and low frequency states, they're literally losing or gaining information.
Yes. I love the one quote from Einstein is the field is the sole governing agency of the particle. And that's the story. And
yeah,
that's it.
Yes.
The field, and we are particles in the field.
Oh, we could do a whole lounge act, you know, which came first, the field or the particle.
Well, it's interesting because I say, give a new Genesis story. And I say, yeah, inorganic earth meets laser sun, mm-hmm. creates an etching, which causes a mobile chemistry with energy in it from the photons that it captures. Okay, so it's energized matter at this point, and impose upon it a fractal geometry. And the significance is this is why nature, bottom line, is fractal geometry.
Okay,
all of nature is fractal.
You have seen these so-called Kolodny patterns, right?
Yeah, which patterns?
Kolodny?
Probably have, but not
okay, in the when I describe it, you will know it instantly. You take a disc, a thin metal disc, you put sand on it.
Oh, yeah.
And you stroke the edge of it with a violin bow.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You create these resonant patterns, and the sand forms into the nodes and the patterns of the frequencies interacting, bouncing around in the metal plate. That's... And you change the frequencies, and the pattern goes suddenly change.
Right.
I open the show with the three holes in one at the Masters because that sounds like a Kolodny pattern effect where you slip into a totally different resonant mode instantly.
There's a change in the field, and this is what's coming about. There's a harmony that's coming in. It's going to make things really beautiful. The idea is the vibration that we're following in the program is the one that is misleading us and taking us in the direction of a program. And you know, it's just interesting because I'm not just making like the simple analogy. Yeah, we've been programmed like the Matrix, but I offer the fact that people and many of people on this line have experienced getting out of the program. In other words, many people have taken the red pill without knowing it, but the consequences have profoundly changed their lives when they did it. And the answer is when people fall head over heels in love with somebody, no matter how crappy their life was up to the day that happened, the moment they entangle with this person, guess what? It's heaven on earth. They're energized, man. They're healthy. Life is beautiful. And I go, wait a minute. It was yesterday and all the way up, it was this. And then today it's this. And the answer was, now science has recognized it. When you're in love like that, remember I said our lives are 95% run by subconscious programs, which are primarily derived from other people. And when you have the hands on the wheel, that's when you're driving wishes and desires. I say, yes, and science has found when people are in love, they stay mindful. They stop the thinking. And the significance is when you stop the thinking process, then that means your consciousness is driving your system, and it's going to take you to your destination.
But wait. If we're malprogrammed, most of us on this planet in those first 7 years,
yes.
How can turning your life over to the autopilot, which has been misprogrammed, lead to a good outcome?
Oh, no, I didn't say turn it over to the autopilot. I'm saying this. When you become
But isn't
mindful,
that what emotional connections and love is all about, not thinking, just going with the flow?
It's keeping your conscious mind in the present moment rather than thinking about other things like having a beer or something like that. It's like, hey, wait, look where you are, man. What do you think about having a beer at this moment? It's like, no, you keep your conscious mind present. Point. When your conscious mind is present, you are not defaulting to the program. You're out of the program. And I say, yes, when people fall in love, no matter how short that honeymoon period is, the honeymoon period is something that changed your whole life. And I say, because it was so great, you loved it, whatever. And I go, great. And I say, that's because it was the first time in your life that you stop playing the program long enough to put your hands on the wishes and desires and manifest the reality. And I go, so what is the consequence of getting out of the program? The answer is the same experience as living in a honeymoon state your entire life.
Well, because there are some people that do that, but that's a rare, it's a rarity. I mean, most people fall in love, fall out of love.
Yeah, because so let's fill in the stories. The idea is you fell in love because you were playing the person you were, or your mate was playing their person. What? Meaning you're playing your conscious mind. That's who you are. I am conscious mind.
Okay, now this is from your first book was, what, a decade ago, The Biology of Belief. This is from the latest book called The Honeymoon Effect, right?
Yeah. It's an understanding of an application of the biology of belief to how come our lives don't work out the way we want. And we have a belief that we're victims of circumstances without recognizing, no, our programs, psychologists will tell you, our programs in that first 7 years are mainly disempowering, self-sabotaging, limiting beliefs. And if you are going to run from those programs 95% of the day, you are sabotaging your entire life. But it's invisible. And that's why it's called a subconscious. But I say, why is it invisible? Why is your own behavior invisible? And I go, hey, I give this in a lecture, and everybody laughs because they're familiar with it. I say, you have a friend, you know your friend's behavior very, very well, and you happen to know your friend's parent. And one day you see that your friend has some of the same behavior as their parents. So, you know, you offer like, hey, you know, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then you back away from Bill because Bill goes totally ballistic. How can you compare me to my dad? And I say, and most people have that experience. I say, okay, you want a profound story? That's it. What is the profound story?
It there. We're at the top of the hour. The 2-hour, the witching hour here in the Mountain Time Zone. We're going to have a little music. We'll then sneak away for a quick commercial. And then we shall return. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning, exploring the ranges and ramifications of connected consciousness and reprogramming the program from the programmer, he, she, or it, or ET, or other dimensional, or, you know, where is this program coming from, or is it just our consensus of that's the way things are? We shall return.
The land of seas against the sand, lies a beach of mixed emotion. You made me king of this land.
And we are back on the land of enchantment, desert tonight, a little over 40 degrees. It's going to be, you know, kind of early spring in Georgia, Patrick, just passing that along. Bruce, you've got some interesting stories for specifics in the honeymoon effect, because we're kind of leaping from the beginning of the story to the end of the story without the middle. But everybody, of course, is a bit narcissistic, and they all want to know, well, how does this affect me? What should I be looking for? How can I find ultimate bliss forever and ever and ever and not, you know? But then they find they have to be conscious, so that maybe messes up the template. So there are a couple of stories that I thought you might want to go through.
Well, I want to leave the cliffhanging just parts that we just ended with that very quickly. Is A, how did you fall in love and your life became that beautiful honeymoon? The answer is because it's the first time you kept your hands on the wheel over 90% of the time, according to science. When people are in love, they stay conscious, mindful, and therefore are not defaulting to those bad programs. Then you say, well, how come the honeymoon ends? And the answer, again, is simple. Life gets busy. You still have a job. You still got to fix the car. You got chores to do. You start thinking, and I go, yeah, but what's the consequence when you're thinking? I say, well, then the program defaults to the downloaded programs, and you start being like Bill. You start playing your dad or your mom, and you don't even see it, but your partner is aghast, like, because these programs didn't play during the honeymoon. You were being who you are. But once the program started to play, you're somebody else now. And most of those programs are negative, as I said. So there's the big problem, because then conflicts occur in a relationship when subconscious programs are sabotaged, when the person saying or behaving in those unconscious ways doesn't see it themselves and feels like they're being victimized because they didn't even see what the heck happened. So that's the nature of it. And so it really is important to understand that it's when we shift back to the program that life goes back to, oh man, this is terrible. And when you had your hands on the wheel, you manifested a complete other reality. So the idea is to recognize, A, 95% of the time you are not running your program with wishes and desires. You're doing whatever the programs of limitation are that are subconscious, and it's invisible, and therefore it's like we feel victims, like not recognizing our own subconscious behavior.
So then the question becomes, of course,
yes.
How do you take control of your programming?
And that has always created a problem because of this. A, the belief that there's something called the mind. And the fact is, well, actually, there's at least two basic minds. One is called the conscious mind, and one is called the subconscious mind. And why they're separating them is, A, they have different functions, and B, they learn in different ways. And that's where the problem comes from, is because our conscious mind is self-awareness. I can see myself. I can say, okay, I don't like this. I want to change this. And I say, yeah, okay, but I've got this program of this behavior. And I say, where's that? I say, that's in the subconscious mind. I go, ah. Then sometimes we say, well, I give my, you know, I talk to myself and say, come on, Lipton, you can do better than that, you know, trying to get myself in order. And then the joke comes like, well, who am I talking to when I'm talking to myself? And they say, well, I'm talking to the subconscious. And I go, that's the problem. The subconscious is just a record playback device. There's nobody in there. And so talking to yourself is the most frustrating thing in the world because you are not affecting the subconscious. It doesn't learn that way. And this has caused the biggest problem. And the fact is, well, then you say, well, you can only teach the subconscious the way it can learn. And then I say, ah, well, then I tell you how. The first 7 years, as we mentioned early, was that your brain is primarily in theta, which is record. And I go, and every night when you go to bed, guess what? Your EEG activity, higher functioning beta, calming down at night, alpha. And just as you're going to sleep, guess what? You drop into theta. I say, ah, but you put earphones on at night, and as soon as you're sleeping and there's a program going, guess what? It's downloading in the same way programs were downloaded when you were a child. So that's one way. But after you're seven, then you learn by habit, by practice, repeating things over and over and over again until it became unconscious, and that's now a subconscious program. So if you want to change...
Well, it's also called training, and that's what schools, you know, evolved into, and military service.
Yeah, but what are they training?
But that content is separate from the function. You know, we respond to training depending on what...
Right.
Kind of irregardless. Is that a word? Well, it is now. Of what we intend, the only way we can get there is to train like stevedores to get moderately good. The question then becomes, how do you train to be creative?
Ah, and this is a big problem because the jumping around part, but it's an interesting part because creativity, every system in your body is based on use it or lose it. The system's significance is that anything that's not being used is using the energy for maintenance that's never being used. So the system takes it apart. You need it again, you can build it up again. But if you're not using it, it takes it away. This applies to every part of the system, including the nervous system. So, for example, when they would stitch up one eyelid of a cat and wait 2 weeks and then take the stitches out, guess what? In the 2 weeks, the nerves that never got used were taken away, and the cat was blind in that eye. Why? Because it didn't use it. And then we go now to the issue of education, which strikes a deep chord with me, and that is this. In our world today, with the emphasis so-called on math and science, any course of creativity, music and art, creative craft courses, all these things have been taken out of the system. I said, but what's the relevance of that? I said, you are just programming them to download these facts, but none of the courses are using that part of the brain that is creativity. If you stop being, if you don't use creativity, it will disappear. And so this is why we're lagging so much in the U.S. compared to other countries today in regard to what's creative coming out of this country. And we were leaders, but over the time, to make us more science and mathematicians, we threw creativity out of the system, in a sense, causing a decline in the function of the creative mind because it's not exercised. Okay.
Okay.
And that becomes important because then we get so caught in this program, that first 7 years of program, which, as I said, psychologists will tell you, they're disempowering, self-sabotaging, the largest percent.
And when we participate in mass media, starting with this shows like this, and then obviously television, and, you know, big screen, silver screen film.
Yes.
When you're watching television, it's been well demonstrated that you do go into this kind of hypnagogic state. You are in a mode to be programmed. So all our mass media is, and this is when I argue with people that they say it's just money, I say, no, it's programming. It's conscious streams and messaging and control of society through what they see, that reality. You know, the old joke, if it doesn't, you know, fall, if a tree doesn't fall on CNN, did it ever fall? Because, well, you know, or my friend Roddenberry, when I showed Gene the first imagery of Cydonia, you know, an ancient Martian civilization, and he looked up from behind his desk and he said, but Dick, if this was real, it would be on television. So, I mean, to me, that's one of the most important things that any friend of mine has ever told me, because it reemphasizes the idea in network that that's what everybody was railing against, the programming of television. You know, go to your window, throw it up, lean your head out, say, I'm not going to take this anymore. Yes. That's what's going on in front of us right now on the left, the middle, and the right, and it's not political. It's about life. People are defining their existence as not optimum, and they want a different reality, and they're using the levers of conventional mainstream political process to try to get there. But I think this is so much deeper, Bruce. And then the question is, how can us cultural creatives, how can we help at this nodal point? What can we do to push us all over the cliff so we explore the unthinkable and life becomes livable again?
Well, the whole idea is this, getting out of the program, because it's going to operate, you know, even if I know consciously, I say to myself, I'm going to try and stay conscious. The reality is thinking is inevitable. So the idea is this, you have to reprogram it. And there's that old phrase, very important, necessity is the mother of invention. And there's this invention, there's a new psychology modality called energy psychology. It involves characteristics of super learning. Relevance. These belief modification programs can have you, you can change your belief that you've carried your whole life, unconscious activities, unconscious programs that are limiting you. You can change a program in a matter of 5 to 6 or 7 minutes. It's new. It's necessary. We must get hold of ourselves, take back.
But Bruce, aren't we back to the old Marin joke? The light bulb has to want to change.
Well, I tell you, people, okay, next concept here is called the biological imperative. Biological imperative is built into every living organism from bacteria up. And what it is something that we don't know where it is and how it's programmed, but it's called the will or drive to survive. And the significance about that is the drive force is in our body is like, if you need food, you're going to have a drive to get food. You need water, you're going to drive for water. And if you have a need for protection, you're going to get into protection and all that. Well, the point about it is this. The biological imperative of people all over the planet right now, whether they have any conscious understanding of it, their biological imperative is telling them there's an edge here. There's something edgy. Something is going on. It's sort of like saying, be aware something is going on, even if you have no idea what the heck it is, because it's a field. It's a field that's in a disharmonious state right now, and that's where vitality is lost, disharmony. Disharmony is called destructive interference.
Right.
Where two energies come together and they cancel each other out.
See, that goes to our meta model, which is the reason on this planet we're having all these problems, 7 billion people. And a friend of mine the other day said, this is hell. And I said, well, hell with, you know, benefits, depending upon how you define being trapped in the matrix or taking control. So we're back to consciousness controlling our larger reality.
Yes, and that's why I end up with what book did I write? The Honeymoon Effect, man. It's like, yes, if you created heaven on earth, no matter how few days it was, it's like, you see it, you did it, you know what it was like to have that power to wake up and say, oh my God, I'm so happy to be here today and love life. And it's like, yeah, that was when all that programming of fear. And fear is the programmer in the system. And the fears are so rampant that people, you know, and let me give you a simple fact about consciousness and fear. That is this. When you're in fear, the adrenal system is pumping out stress hormones. And I go, yeah, what's it doing? I said, it closes the blood vessels in the gut. And that causes the blood to go to the arms and legs because you're going to have to run or fight. Something's happening. So you put all the energy into the arms and legs. So you'd close off the gut. And I say, yeah, but the gut is taking care of the body maintenance. I go, yeah. And also, the stress hormones shut off the immune system. Reason is that it uses so much energy, and if you're running from a saber-toothed tiger and you got a bacterial infection, the bacterial infection is not relevant if the tiger catches you.
Not in the short term, no.
100%. So basically, the energy is shuffled from internal monitoring and control to getting ready to run and fight. Okay, and it does it through the closing of the blood vessels. And I say, and here's the other thing it does. The same stress hormones, when they're in the brain, close the blood vessels of consciousness down. You say, why? Because consciousness is too slow to use in a state of emergency. Mm-hmm. I say, what's the consequence? When people are in fear, they become less intelligent. And so if you scare them enough, put enough fear into them about all this stuff, man, they'll step in line and vote for somebody.
Well,
idiot.
It's so obviously that this apocalyptic, you know, fear porn script we're being given. You know, we've got to beat out every ISIS terrorist. We have to build a wall 100 miles high. We have to seal ourselves in, hide under the bed. That's not who Americans used to be.
No.
How come I'm seeing that the rest of it, the grassroots on left and right, is so unhappy. They're willing to toss it all over the cliff in the prayer that it will just somehow get better, like throwing jackstraws on the carpet. Anything is better than this. It's like, and this is a really bad analogy because it goes to the heart of some incredible suffering, but during 9/11, there were a lot of people who threw themselves out of those upper stories and fell to their death. Why did they choose that moment? And Judy Wood's book describes that somehow they were being bathed in a field, in a technology that ultimately brought those buildings down, but the side effect was it made it inconceivable they could stay in that field because it was killing them, and they would perish in midair where they could get out of that beam, get out of that technology, whatever was used on those buildings. And there are photographs of people sailing to their deaths with a look of beatific peace and tranquility, even though they know they're going to die, because where they left was hell and it was suddenly over. And that is such an awful commentary on the ability to use this physics in a negative way. How do
Absolutely.
We make the choice? How do we decide whether we create hell or we create heaven? And that's where we come back to the nodal part of the physics, because my feeling is we're coming up to truth time, to where if that 2% can be corralled to think the positive template, to lay out the best we can be, i.e. the Bernie Sanders of the world,
yes,
we can make the difference. And the other side, the black side, the dark guys, the bad guys, they're trying to push us with fear into total control, 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 give away our consciousness because we're desperately afraid of existence.
Exactly. And one of the things that just changed my whole life, going back to the very beginning, is what did I see at that moment when I recognized that my identity was being picked up by antennas? I said to myself, oh my God, I'm not in this body. I am a broadcast or energy field that is manipulating this body. The analogy is the Mars rover. What's it like on Mars? I can't go there personally, so I'll send up something that will tell me. I said, well, that looks like a little. In what sense? Well, it has eyes to see with. It's got sense receptors to smell and taste the soil and feel the temperature. And it sends a signal to the vehicle and drives it around. And the vehicle, as it drives around, picks up information and sends it to the guy at NASA.
A little more sophisticated model or metaphor might be virtual reality. And if we are each a virtual reality being, you know, as above, so below, when we die, you know, the robot quietly collapses and we return as to the source of who we really are, wherever that is, in some other dimension. And as the physics ratchets up and down between these dimensions, as the flow of information back to Shannon gets better or worse, we become more of who we are or less of who we are. And that's where I have this cliche come in.
Yep.
As the physics is changing, looking around us now, the good are getting better and the bad are getting worse because the signals of who they really are, who we really are becoming clearer over the noise. And that's like the Jim Carrey movie where for 24 hours he couldn't tell a lie. People are impelled to say the most extraordinary things without conscious, you know, filtering, without the normal, politically correct filters in place. And that's Donald Trump.
I'm sorry to say that, because that's Germany was in some very bad straits.
Yes.
And what you had to do was find somebody to blame it on. And you had to, you know, appeal to that group of people that were so upset with the situation that, give me any other story than this one and buy into that.
But is it maybe, look, I asked before, who's doing the programming? I have felt for some time that at the very minimum, you know, this is kind of a minimalist approach, if you have polarities, and the physics gives us all kinds of polarities, without polarities, nothing ever moves.
Right.
Right? So you got to have the good and the bad, otherwise life isn't life. It's just kind of this big primordial ocean with no waves, no little any difference, so nothing is alive. You have to have polarity to have life, to have consciousness, to have change. Change is
absolutely
life.
Absolutely.
Okay. In that modality, as the physics changes and we get more connected, whoever we really are is reflecting, and that's why we're seeing things apparently collapse. Look at 11 million papers from Panama the other day. Candidates talking about, you know, loosing nukes on the world, showing a completely deranged, you know, connection to their higher source. But then we have stunning heroes, people who throw themselves in front of bullets and trains without thinking, who are beyond themselves, who are that model of what it is to be a real human. It's all going on now at once in a rising crescendo. And how do we, the folks that want to see it come out the right way, how do we take control and tip the river in where we want to go?
And that's basically, it's just simple. I said, since you've been programmed, and you say, yeah, but I was programmed the first 7 years. I don't know what the heck the program was when I was 0, 1, 2, 3. And you say, well, I don't know what the programs are. And then I'm going to say, fine, you don't have to know what the programs are for a simple reason. 95% of your life is a printout of your subconscious program. So you just look at your life, and the first thing is this. Everything that you like that comes to you, and it's like, that's great, you got a program to let that in. But anything, and this is the simple part, anything you struggle for, work hard, sweat over, put a lot of effort into it, there's a simple question, why are you working so hard? And the answer is inevitably a subconscious program is not supporting that destination. So all of a sudden it says now you don't have to change your whole life. You could just have to start to see. The reason is this, as each one of us becomes in harmony with ourselves, then the collection of people in harmony, Richard, is what you're really talking about. And so the old hippies thing was, take care of your backyard before you go out and change the world.
So wait, this is important. Are you saying that the key to perpetually being in love is to start by loving yourself?
Yes. Yeah, it's just logic. It's like, if somebody says they love you and you look at yourself, I'm not lovable, then make logical sense out of that.
You want to hear something stunningly weird that's so synchronistic I have to mention it?
Please.
Have you been following Elon Musk's journey?
Well, I just love the man. Yeah, go ahead.
Yep, okay. Well, he succeeded in the thing that a lot of people said, oh, you'll never do it, and he did it the other night after try number 5. He landed the first stage of his rocket, the Falcon 9, back on this barge floating in the South Atlantic, right?
That was a beautiful video.
That was an incredible, amazing video.
It's so
it arcs down. It's like a, you know, homesick hummingbird. It's coming home. And then, do you know the name of the barge that it landed on for the first time he did this successfully?
No, please.
was called Yes, I Still Love You. He read your book.
It's just, this is the, you see what love is, there's fear and love, and you say, well, that's nicer words, and I could just tell you what the other aspect in the energy is. One is noise and one is harmony. And as fear makes noise in our life, it takes us, that's why I said 90% of the illness on this planet is due to stress. And the stress is what? The fear that we've been programmed with, that we're not going to survive, or this isn't going to happen, or that. And it's like, that is created this health crisis. Only 1% of disease is connected to genetics. And it's like, the rest is, you're not living in harmony. And the civilization is not in harmony. Nature is saying, you got a choice.
It's even worse than that. The physics of the solar system, the physics of this planet went cattywampus about 65 million years ago, the Great War, the one that obliterated this incredible type 2, ultra-sophisticated, ultra-connected human civilization of which we are dim, and I mean that deliberately, dim, distant descendants, barely out of the mud, crawling around saying, what the hell's going on? If the physics is broken, it's in dissonance, Bruce. How do we put it into resonance? How does an individual in a dissonant field become into resonance, i.e. come into love with themselves?
Well, that is the part. We have to just learn that just as much as we learn that we were not lovable. It's learning, and there's many ways. And I said you could do it through energy psychology. But we have to do it. Why? Because if we're going to vibrate at a tuning fork of love, which is harmony, and it's very important. There is an evolution that's happening, and because of the fractal geometry, the plan is already unfolded in an earlier stage. We are playing out the period where the end of the dinosaurs and the rise of the mammals, and that civilization is the character. So at first, mariculture were the fish people. They lived at the sea, and that's the only way they could live, where the water was. And then amphibians took the water onto the land. That's when agriculture took us out, so we were not restricted to the edge. But then came the machines. And those are the reptiles. They're machines, man. And the relevance about it, they're just
isn't
strictly...
that giving reptiles a bad name? Come on.
I'm sorry to
remember
that.
The dinosaurs were not reptiles. You know, they were warm-blooded. Yeah. They were not reptiles. That's the classic misinformation.
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't say that correctly. I was wrong, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it's true. There was a transition going on, and what was interesting about it is it gave rise to the birds, and then we came through as mammals, and I say, what's the relevance? Well, the reptiles of the machine age, the driven by oil, the blood of the dinosaur. Man, so civilization in the machine age is the reptile starting small mom and pop shops. And
again,
then,
that metal might not be totally accurate. Dinosaurs do not come from, or oil does not come from dead.
No,
dinosaurs.
No, no, that's euphemistic, please.
Yes, that is the 19th century model. It's much more interesting.
Yeah, but it's a nice, it makes the story nice because we're also running out of that so-called blood.
Well, yeah. Easily accessible, but we should. You know, this is kind of like a self-limiting process. If we continue to use fossil fuels, let's say that the planet is regenerating, which I think it is, and I'm not alone, you know, back to Tommy Gold and abiotic oil and all that. We have examples in the solar system. Look at Titan. There's oil there. Look at the dark black stuff we've seen on Mars. There is oil created seeping up from the ground there. So if it's not life, if it's not biology that creates oil, then it's a process that's part of the physics, part of nature, part of this organic
matrix.
Yes, the creation of proteins with different geometries to be the prototype for life.
Yeah, but the fact is it's the oil combustion that is creating one of the bigger, you know, aggressive acts in our environment. So running out is great, and Elon Musk, God bless him, pushed the industry by his dream, has changed the whole direction of this industry, because we've got to be working in harmony. So we need to work in harmony with ourselves. That means if you've just got to feel in love, you know, with yourself. And it's interesting because one of the stories that Dear M mentioned was the fact that I was in the Caribbean when I was learning all this stuff, and I still have my bad programs. And I was looking for somebody. I had a villa. I lived on a beach. I had everything, you know, and except I didn't have a partner, and I was so wanted a partner, and every time I could find somebody to chat up, I was like, oh, you know, and I remember this one particular day, this woman came in on somebody's yacht, and then I was, saying, hey, you know, you could stay here, and she looked at me just cold and looked at me and said, I can't be with you, you're too needy. And it was just like, boom, I got like this whop, this slap in my face for a second, but it woke me up. And I said, thank you very much. And I realized something. I said, look, I just described where I was living, man. If I wasn't happy in a tropical paradise, working a day a week and living on that, it's like...
But it was all external. Hold it there. We're at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we're going to go from the external to the internal. We're going to talk about how do we get control. We're going to actually talk about pink elephants. And the fact that you don't want to think about them. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and yes, we shall return.
It seemed just like a perfect evening. Get in the car and drive away. Behind a day of grieving, before my life had passed away, I'm on my way. I'm on my way. I'm on my way. I'm on my way.
And welcome back to the other side of midnight, the land of enchantment under a very interesting crescent moon. Anyway, Bruce, please finish the story.
Well, it was just the fact that I had to look at my life at that moment and say, why was I so desperately searching for somebody for love? And the fact was I realized, well, wait a minute, look at everything I have. Why can't I be happy? It was what I got. And it was a point that says, yeah, what's wrong with you, Lipton? And at some point I started to get so into, hey, wait, I have everything here. I'm healthy. I got all these things. I don't need somebody. And it was beautiful because at that point where I started to recognize I'm happy with who I am. I like who I am and all that. And it was interesting because once that was resolved, then it was interesting because then, meeting people, I was meeting more people than I wanted to at some point because there was a different vibration.
So you had to come into resonance within yourself and then you wound
Absolutely.
Up attracting the right people.
And being in harmony with oneself, living the life that you want and not giving in to a program when you can see it where it is and changing your program, that's what I had to do. It's like, wait, I've been programmed and I've been programmed incorrectly. And these programs, when operating without me seeing it, are preventing me from getting to where I want to go. So it was owning the fact that I've been programmed and then owning the fact that if I want to change it, then I have to do something. And once I got into harmony, it was like, you can't believe it, in a sense of how much resistance I was experiencing in everyday life. And after the harmony, it's like the pathway just opens up and stuff happens so easily. And life is so easy that it's a mind blower.
Okay. So here's the biggie. How do you teach that?
Well, the first thing is what I do in my programs is I provide the science because we live in a world and there's like, okay, it sounds like the last hour and a half Lipton is like a new age guy thing like this. I go, well, no, this is not new age stuff. This is actual, cell biology mechanisms, published research and all this kind of stuff like that. And yet what does it get to an understanding? And the understanding is we said, look, we have been programmed. That's to help get us off the ground, but once you become conscious, you can drive the vehicle with your wishes and desires. But the more thinking, the more you're not being mindful, the more you're going to be playing the original startup programs. And the point is what? We're coming into an evolution. We're going to change the way we've been dealing with ourselves, the way we deal with each other, start to look at this beautiful picture of the evolution, because the evolution, I'll tell you, is simply what it is. It's not the evolution that changes any human biologically. No, it's not. We're not evolving as individuals. What is evolving is a new superorganism, by definition, called humanity, where we are all cells in the same body. And once we start to recognize, hey, every person on this planet is a cell in the same body, it changes the whole understanding of community and life and working in harmony and cooperativity, and everything changes. And so we're in a transition place, and this is why the millennials are important, because the old structure keeping us in the fear-based thing that scares us, and we pay all of our money not to be afraid and then become mindless in some sense by toning out the world every night. That's the older generation. The younger generation is not there. So guess what? A system can only stand based on how many people are supporting it. And I go, well, guess what? 50% or more of the people now are not supporting this system. And what does that mean? It's like, well, it's going to collapse because the people are pulling out. And I say, well, who's the biggest?
Well, all right. Let's be careful about using words, because words have power, and power shapes imagery. And,
I get excited.
It's not going to collapse. It's going
transition.
That's what the apocalypse. Yeah. Remember, apocalypse doesn't mean disaster. It means enlightenment. It means people going, holy blank blank, is that what that was trying to tell me?
Yeah.
Everybody around us now agrees that the system is rigged. The system, in fact, the other morning, Morning Joe Scarborough, went on for a soliloquy for 20 minutes about it's rigged, 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 rigged. It's like the mainstream is attaching itself to this enlightenment, to where they're actually looking around and they're telling us exactly the truth of what's going on, how rest of people are. It's like I've never seen it in my lifetime, which means if you can get the stodgy mainstream to actually utter the unthinkable and to look at the paradigm and call it what it is there any ceiling, Bruce, on where we can now take control? Remember that line from Close Encounters, we're taking control of this conversation. When can us collective, consciously creative folks take control to move the planet in the direction we all deserve?
It's moving. It looks slow. Look, I've been looking at this evolution for years in my research, and when I was like, it was only, let's say, 30 years ago, look what happened in 30 years. We are evolving. It doesn't look as fast, because it didn't happen like overnight.
Yeah, but look at what happened in the LGBT community. It happened overnight. And all the mainstream is going like, what in the hell is going on? And it's all about, here's your favorite word, it's all about, in that area, love. Real love. People must be free to love. It's like the cornerstone of your, theory expounded tonight. The mainstream is embracing it in a way that I never again thought would happen in my lifetime, because the future is not linear, it's asymptotic, it changes, and the rate of change now is warp 9.
I know it, but that's the that's the point that says we are definitely not going to be here in a very short time. We're going to be doing something different. It'll change. It'll be that lightning thing that you're looking for. Yes, how many people? Not that many people, but that means each person. You see, the meditation thing was really cool. When they changed the crime rate, when a group of meditators got together, over in Israel.
Yeah, the Maharishi effect in Washington in the early 90s.
Yeah. And then I said, and then what happened when they went home? And said, then everything went right back to exactly the way it was just before.
Right.
And the idea is this: if we want to make the change has to be permanent. It can't just go sit down and say for a few days we're going to really be in harmony. It's like, no, it has to be a way of life. And when it's a way of life, then you're doing it 24/7. It's not just sitting down and trying to hold the field for a period of time. And it's contagious. It's contagious on a biological level because of things that we know about called mirror neurons, where people can see other people and acquire their what they're feeling. This is part of the acceleration of how it's going to work. But that means that we have to have people that are living this way, not just saying, okay, between 9 and 11 tonight, I'm going to meditate on this. It's like, no, this is your life. We have to live this way. And the joy is, living this way is so much better than living under the fears that are always being drilled into you. What if you just disconnected from that? And the answer is, hey, your life's still going on and you're not paying attention to that. And it's, hey, life is much better. And that's basically.
But it's so easy to sit here and talk about this glibly. Oh, change this, change that, focus on this. Bruce, it's damn hard. Now, you had a unique circumstance coming together at the right place, at the right time, right environment. But most people, you know, live as, I forget which pope, I think it was Pius XII called, you know, quiet lives of desperation. How do we get those people to raise above the rat race, the noise, and to reconsider who they are?
Well, from my own personal experience, I'll tell you this, we don't have to even try and do anything because, look, when I started off my lecture stuff, which was so counter to what was going on in the world, I had trouble pulling people to come into the room, okay? But over the years, the audiences are getting bigger. Not that I'm doing anything different. It's just that more and more people are looking for answers outside of the box. More and more people want something different. They're being driven to do this.
Well, see, so this goes in line with my model, which is that it isn't Bernie or Trump that is really the superstar here. It's that the light bulb desperately has to change, and they're the closest models in that polarity on both sides of this invisible middle that reflect the change people, consciousness is demanding, and they're just like chips floating on this ocean because we're the ocean and we're demanding it's got to get different.
And it will.
Oh, it is, yeah, but the question is, how will it get different?
Igniting a fuse.
That's the choice.
I'm saying it's good. What's good about it? If you learn to live in peace and harmony with yourself, look, people walk through hot coals. Only because their mindset is taking them through hot coals. They get in the middle of that walk and have a moment of, is this doable? Is that's the instant they'll get burned, and people get burned a lot. And so the basic idea is this. There's a mindset of walking. There's an old saying, surround yourself with white light. Well, put that in terms of energy. Surround yourself with energy, light, a field. Your thought, your consciousness, your heart is like an amplifier for what's going on in the carrier for your thought stuff. It's broadcasting to the field. And this becomes relevant because as more and more light bulbs turn on, we will reach that density.
Are we talking Rupert Sheldrake?
It's a field, absolutely. It is a field. The more people that are doing it.
I'm talking about the 100th monkey thing, where if you set up a different pattern, it will entrain more people into that new pattern. Again, how do you establish the new pattern? What's the critical mass?
Well, that's just it. I don't know what the critical mass is. The numbers, isn't the Maharishi effect have numbers to it, to 1% of the square root of the whole or something?
Yes, something like that. Dean Rain and I discussed the other night
some small number.
Just a very small number of people. We've done some consciousness work here to try to get people to affect, like the whole Jimmy Carter thing. You know, Jimmy has cancer one day, and suddenly he doesn't have cancer. And I really think it's because he had millions of people who had one thought about Jimmy Carter. Get well.
100%.
Get well.
100% agree.
Well, nothing's ever 100, but it was overwhelmingly positive.
To me, your interpretation to me is 100% agreeable.
Okay.
That, yes.
Oh, okay.
Effect. There's a field effect, and it's focused. And you can focus it on individuals, or you can focus it on communities.
So why can't we focus it on getting the damn world we want, that we deserve?
Well, we have to find out how many people are satisfied and happy with their lives and in love and wake up every day to shine a light out there, or how many people wish to see this happen. It's a different answer. And this is why it's important for us to say, okay, this program is important because you're giving an enlightenment to this fact, but then we also have to turn back and say, but we are participants in the evolution. We're not watching it. It's not on television per se. So we have to, as listeners, we have to be a participant in this process because we're setting a field. And the field, you don't even have to work that hard because the field is already bringing people to this new understanding. It's taking people out of their conventional world, and whether they're forced out because of a job situation or they walked out because they just realized, this is not my life, man. And more people are taking power. And then you say, well, how many? And I say, well, Richard, I agree with you. There's a number, but I can't tell you what it is. And will we get there? I sure think we will. I absolutely do. I'm very so hopeful that, you know, looking at the fractal nature.
Isn't it interesting in this, back to the political thing again, normally the way these primaries have been structured on both sides, everything is kind of decided by South Carolina and the Super Tuesday. And all the other states in a 50-state union, these United States are basically irrelevant. This year, there are so many nodal points where each state and those voters and those people, their attention, their consciousness, as Radin calls it, is the attention effect, has been almost like it was being planned and designed and manipulated. So each of these states now becomes important in and of themselves. And those people, those connected consciousness people looking around saying, what do we do different? How do we get something different? They get a chance to shine in the limelight, in the sun, to star, you know, their 15 minutes of fame, like we're coming up on New York, and then we come up on the Mid-Atlantic states, and then Indiana, and then California. In other words, California never mattered. Now it's the holy grail on both sides of this polarity, which rogues, which outliers, which revolutionaries that are spearheading on the white horse a change in consciousness, regardless of which you believe with, but changes in the atmosphere, it's in the ether, and everybody is going to count in this cycle. And that in itself, like the three holes in one, cannot be statistically validated. So we're in the twilight zone. We're in a matrix that's somehow being changed as we watch.
Yeah, and go back to your fields. The fields are different, and since fields are programming the way proteins move, which is how we think and how we move physically, and every other aspect of biology is how a field affects a protein, then by definition, if you change the field, then you're changing the behavior of the protein complexes that we are. And that's why if a field changes, things like dinosaurs may not be able to exist because the field that allowed them to work doesn't exist anymore.
See, that is it. Bruce, you are so brilliant. Let me tell you what our model is. When the Great War happened and that planet, that one that used to be where Mars is now, was blown to smithereens with this technology, it drastically lowered the physics of the entire solar system. And it changed it to where we're no longer connected like we were then. And occasionally the cycles get us up to something where we're much better than we usually are, and that's in that 25,600-year cycle, the precessional cycle, the yugas. But it's like, why don't we collectively decide tonight, all of us that are kind of thinking about this and conscious about it, why don't we decide to fix the physics itself permanently so future generations or millennia or often succeeding civilizations don't have to go through the same stupid stuff that everybody before us did since the great collapse 65 million years ago.
Yeah. Well, it was, if there's something called collective amnesia, as Velikovsky would call it, if there was something so profoundly altering of life on this planet, then there are generations of people go off and they might as well be back in the Stone Age, after 20, 30 years or 40 years of no culture.
Okay, so the next question is your programming bigger than your model allows? Because it's not just 7 years of being incarnated in this reality again, but it's all the programming of all the previous realities that you can't get rid of because it's cumulative.
Yeah, but you see, but then get rid of is the interesting thing. If we talked about the two interactions of energy, and we talked about good vibes, bad vibes, or constructive interference, destructive interference, it basically says this. If there's an energy that comes in that is not in harmony with you and your equipment, your nervous system, broadcasts a frequency that is in the called destructive interference, you can neutralize anything. And this is where the interesting part of our consciousness is really involved, because we are broadcasting our thoughts, yes, that because we can read them outside, number one. But the energy fields that are coming into us can also be impacted by the inner fields that we're sending out of us. And therefore, walking across fire, perhaps, or some of the interesting people down south, the serpent handlers who in a state of belief, drink strychnine poison and don't have any adverse effects. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. It's like, yeah, you got to be in another consciousness level to understand that. It's not the world that we know. It's a different thing going on.
Well, it's a definite conscious manipulation of the field.
Yes. Yeah. And as you said, if we agreed on the field, which is like, this is the cool part, because the leadership of the world is a small percent, a tiny, tiny percent. And if there's an upheaval, what if everybody just had like a honeymoon experience. And to the each individual that's heaven on earth, I go, yeah, but if everybody was on a honeymoon experience, then by definition, earth does become heaven, which is really
well. But look at how 3D entropy is being assisted. Like just when we really need to connect everybody together, you know, because remember, it's a small portion of people who can connect without technology. Most people yes. need, back to the Forbidden Planet, instrumentalities to do what the Krell were trying to do. So we've developed this technology now called the World Wide Web, social media. Everybody has a gadget. Everybody can talk to anybody else, 6-7 billion of us, when we all get phones and connected at the same time. That's our technological route to connectedness. Is it interesting that that technology has now been provided just about the time the physics says the consciousness can change, but we're on the other side of that window where we need technology to hook us together to realize we can all change it?
Yeah, but again, it's as you know, from the very beginning, the manipulation of what information goes out to the public is how much information you want to empower them with.
Okay, so that brings me to the next question, which is if we've got positive guys trying to change things for the better, what about the bad guys? If you can use technology to enlighten people, can you use technology, particularly if it's torsion field based, to suppress people? Is there such thing as mass mind control because of this connectedness, Dr. Lipton? And how the hell do we fight that?
Well, it's interesting because you can experience it in crowd responses where it's always in those soccer games in Europe, they break into riots all the time. And the interesting thing about it is it demonstrated that a person could be a total pacifist in the middle of that riot, but caught up in the energy of the field.
Yeah, it's called the mob effect.
Yeah, and we'll be hitting somebody over the head with a chair.
Said that an average human being is really intelligent, get him together as a crowd and becomes dumb as dirt? I think it was Robert Heinlein.
Well, or the other thing is this, because, you see, how did we advance to where we got to today? And a large part of it had to do with what's called emergence. And emergence is when all the parts come together, something comes out of it that nobody could have ever seen or understood, you know, by studying any of the parts. And so that's where the new stuff comes. And that's what our evolution, our technological evolution has been predicated on, is that for 100,000 years or several hundred thousand years, people lived exactly the same, according to the anthropologists, the people who looked at wherever they lived, same tools, same stuff at each campsite, whatever. And then about 30,000 years ago, all of a sudden, there was this massive change of where technology became part of our world, and then it's become asymptotic, as you said. It's almost vertical at this moment.
Yep.
And you say, well, what was the drive force? Conventional thinking, because biomedicine is Newtonian, was, 30,000 years ago, there were new genes, and something changed. And then the other group, or the neuro people, said, 30,000 years ago, there was a change in... Turns out, no. It was the fact that enough people came together that they could share information of such diverse things that you could create something new that if you were in a small group, you'd never be able to get a conversation about it. And so basically it says, coming together is, and the physics is the starts to gel together.
But when we're looking back at, you know, the development of human consciousness and development of civilization and cities and, you know, agriculture organized and the multiplication of the number of people on the planet because they could survive against droughts and all that with organized approaches. That came about because they were all physically living on top of each other in the creation of cities, villages, you know, not just one guy here, one guy there. It required them being in close proximity. What happened to the field effect where that all could happen without having to live in close proximity?
Well, because there was this just number of units. That, remember, if each person, consider each person a tuning fork because their thoughts are broadcast from their head. Simple, okay? I say, yeah, but it all now is now power. I say, well, what's power? Well, how many units are broadcasting at any one time?
Right.
And all of a sudden you say, well, then there's a density of how many individuals come together to make a field strong enough to, you know, shape a situation.
Again, is kind of Newtonian thinking. According to Dean Radin, his experiments in focused collective consciousness say it's not the number, it's the intention. which means it isn't the amplitude, it's the frequency, it's the resonant frequencies. See, you can, and I talk about pilot waves. Like when Carter announced his cancer, you had millions of you all over the world, oh, isn't that a shame? In other words, good feelings, but totally inchoate. By having a small group that knew exactly what they were doing and could focus the intention, you can entrain, again, this is a model, that larger consciousness to, like a laser, focus on changing dissonance into resonance. Because cancer is a dissonance. Cancer is a dis-ease. It doesn't belong. So you think of the template as being... Now, as I said earlier tonight with our friend Joe's dad, the light bulb has to want to change. If you're dealing with someone who really doesn't want to stick around, nothing you can do externally will affect change because, again, it all has to come back to us.
Yep, exactly. And the millennials are my big force. And then you say, yeah, but are they organized yet? Are they in any way saying, look, if we all voted at once, the election we change overnight. It'll be tomorrow. It'll be a whole different world. If we wanted to do that, if we were organized as a group. But the fact is, they're disconnected, but they haven't seen the power of them as a community. And that's the evolutionary jump that takes all these units which are out there, which are capable and global and thinking and young and not supporting of the system, but they're powerless if they don't gel into something that amplifies the power. And that, you know, that, again, we keep coming back to the same thing, is that's the nature of community and that's the nature of evolution. Evolution is community coming together, and we have been broken. The community doesn't exist.
Has been broken. Okay, look, we only got a minute left here.
Oh! Okay,
I know, sorry. Time flies. Your website's brucelipton.com.
Yes,
and Bruce
simple.
Lipton Bookstore, you have, what, three or four books out?
I've got three books on my own, and then there's some other things with compilations, as we all know, some other things. But the three books, I am very happy that the universe is, the biology belief is in its 10th year, and it's selling as...
Congratulations.
Well, it's not so much that. It's like, what does it mean? It's like every year there's more and more people looking for different answers.
Well, as Mark Twain said, when it's steamboat time, you steam. And I think in terms of your work, it's steamboat time.
Well, I appreciate being here with you because, you know, this gives us an opportunity to say there's something else going on. And it's a rare opportunity to have that and have an audience that's listening. And I appreciate all of that.
Well, thank you. My guest this morning has been Bruce Lipton, scientist, lecturer, PhD in cell biology, who's now talking about how to change the world through simple connectedness, which, of course, is what this show is all about. So until we connect again, same time, same bat channel, just remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.